back together again, you and I, Friday, May the 5th, Cinco de Mayo 2023, right here on Connecticut Today. We talked about another call from Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders to raise the federal minimum wage to $17 an hour. State House Republican leader Vin Candelora joined us to chat about various issues at the Capitol. And finally, former Bridgeport Democratic State Rep. Chris Caruso stopped by with his weekly thoughts. Has Bernie Sanders ever really done anything in his life except complain? No, honestly, I think that's an honest question. Have people like Bernie Sanders, well, he's made a, he's gotten elected, I guess, complaining and largely not really doing anything connected to what regular people are going through? But again, he has his role and he sucks it up and he wraps his geriatric arms around that. I get it. But you have to love Bernie. I don't know. I'm losing day by day. I'm losing faith with not that I had any big amount of faith to begin with. But man, oh, man, I am sick and tired of people who run their yaps and have no idea what they're talking about. I'm sorry. And I got into this the other day with some people on a liberal website, you know, and all this, well, you should have a living wage and it's the responsibility of a business. No, stop. And we're talking here about Bernie Sanders creating now a headache for Democrats because he wants a hard vote on a bill to raise the national minimum wage to $17 an hour. Now, there is a national minimum wage, but it never really gets touched. Presently, it's only $7.25 an hour, I think. $7.25 an hour. And the reason there isn't a big hullabaloo over the national minimum wage is that nobody cares. Is that most states, the vast majority of states, raise their own minimum wage. They set their own minimums. It is an item, a thing, if you will, that is set up by state legislatures, state legislators, state house lawmakers, state senate lawmakers. A couple of states have unicameral legislatures, whatever. I think Nebraska is one. There may be another one or two. And they do this on a state-by-state basis because certain states don't have as high of a minimum wage. But then again, the cost of living in those states isn't as high. Other states have higher minimum wages, but the cost of living there, gasoline, housing, a condo, an apartment, those are all high. So Bernie Sanders says, well, the national minimum should be raised to $17 an hour over the 4 or 5 years. Now, look, if people want to vote for that, that's fine. I don't care either way. But what I do care about, and I find funny, are lawmakers who sit there and pontificate about stuff. They have no idea what they're talking about. Has Bernie Sanders ever met a payroll? You know, and the people who believe in Bernie Sanders, his ilk, if you will, I mean, they're all over social media yesterday saying, well, go, Bernie, go. And I kind of, as I happen to do from time to time, I act as a friendly little troll. And I get in there and I say, really? Well, what about if paying somebody eventually $17 an hour, no matter what business it is, grocery store, mom and pop, little grease pit, diner, whatever, upper class restaurant, what if that $17 an hour makes it untenable for them to stay in business? And you know the response I got? I got the typical leftist response on this. Well, they don't deserve to be in business. I swear to God, somebody has to kick me. Come in the station and kick me and tell me not to argue with imbeciles. Because I actually was arguing with some imbeciles yesterday on a left-leaning website. Hey, it's what I do. It's my little forensic dive into their minds. And I respond to this guy, really? So Bernie Sanders and people like you who have this idea that profitability is kind of, whatever. So the people that put out their capital to open this restaurant, they have no right. You have no right for, you don't think they have a right to contain costs? and to try and turn a profit. And I got the patent leftist pablum from these people. Well, they don't deserve to be in business if they can't pay their workers a livable wage. Isn't it amazing what the left will say in this country about, you know, who deserves to be in business? What workers deserve? I got news for you people. There's very little in life we deserve. We deserve some things. We deserve a good upbringing. We deserve maybe a roof over our heads. We deserve to be heard. I get that. But this notion that, well, a worker deserves this. Well, no. A worker doesn't deserve anything. Now, they deserve legal protections of a federal government that makes sure the workplace is safe, meets regulations, there are the proper bathroom facilities, fresh water, breaks are given, you can get out of the building if there's a fire or flooding or natural disaster. That you deserve. That you deserve. We can quantify those, and yes, individual states and even the feds, even though the feds don't touch that federal minimum wage, which is the national minimum. So, yes, you can be paid as low as $7.25 an hour. But again, who's going to get employees for that? Yes, some people will choose to work for it, maybe because they have to. I get it. But this notion of the Bernie bots out there who are still there saying, well, you know, a worker deserves this pay. No. A worker deserves whatever pay is legislated by their state governments. Again, that's why the federal minimum is still way down there at 7.25, because it's antiquated. But it's there. I guess it has to be there. But this notion from the left, and I was laughing. I was grinding my teeth and laughing at the same point yesterday. Well, a business doesn't deserve to operate and be profitable unless they're paying X wage to people. Says who? Says you? And then somebody sniped back at me, well, what experience do you have in this? And I say zero. That's why I would never, if I was an elected official, tell a business what they have to pay somebody. I have no idea. I've never kept a balance sheet. I've never, you know, sat in an office middle of the month or end of the month saying, geez, my supplies are here, my wholesale food is here, my electric bill is here, my natural gas bill is here, my workers' comp bill is here, whatever these other bills I pay, and my payroll is here. Sanders remains very popular, says here, with the Democratic Party's progressive base. He warned Thursday there would be political consequences for lawmakers who oppose his efforts. So there you go. See, this is why nobody is pushing Joe Biden not to run, because they know behind Joe Biden there is a wave of leftists waiting to take over the Democratic Party. The era of the centrist common sense Democrat, it's about swirling down the drain here. It's in deep trouble. Sanders' proposal to raise the national minimum from $7.25 an hour to $17 an hour over 5 years is an updated version of the idea he pushed back in 2021 to raise it to $15 an hour, which 8 Democratic senators voted against. 3 of those senators face tough re-elections: Joe Manchin of West Virginia, John Tester of Montana, and Kyrsten Sinema, an independent technically of Arizona, who left the Democratic Party in December. I love Kyrsten Sinema. I love her. She drives them crazy, and there's nothing better. Joe Manchin said in 2021 he would instead support raising the minimum to $11 an hour and then indexing for inflation. Tester at the time voiced concern about imposing a sudden and dramatic increase to the minimum wage. Well, that's because, Senator Tester, you have common sense. But your buddy there, Bernie, across the aisle, he is still, and you love him because, again, Bernie is, if you still are or you were a fan of the Muppets, remember the two guys up in the theater?
Oh, did you see that one? Oh, he's got a nose the size of my foot. Oh,
that Bernie is one of those guys. What were they, Statler and Waldorf? Is that what it was? The guys up in the theater box there? I mean, come on. You know that's Bernie Sanders when you look at him. Might be Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden. Might be Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden. Also voting against it last time, Gene Shaheen of New Hampshire, Maggie Hassan of New Hampshire, Chris Coons of Delaware, and Tom Carper of Delaware, and Angus King, an independent of Maine. Man, oh man, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Am I nuts here? Or seven? Now look, $17 an hour, okay? $17 an hour. If you do the math, so let's do the math live in real time here on the Friday program, folks. By the way, hi, how are you? 17 times 2,080 hours a year, a full year's work, 52 weeks times 40 hours a week is 2,080. So according to Bernie's, and a lot of people who follow him, the Bernie bots, they're still out there. According to his reasoning, the minimum after a few years that anybody should be paid for anything in this country is $35,360. Now, that's a nice idea. I get that. Probably would help the overall economy. But what if that ended up raising prices on stuff? Because, listen, my family ran a family business. I had an extended family member who ran a family business. You people probably, some of you out there, run businesses or participate in them on a micro level to where you see and or feel expenses, dollar signs left and right every day. So I guess the question is here, do we just keep raising the minimum wage and then tell people, and believe me, I worked for the minimum wage for a lot of years in my life. Trust me, a lot older than you would think. You're like, wow, you were that age working for the minimum? Yeah, I was. Because I took the job of my own free will. Plus, a lot of places now pay at least the minimum, or if not more. The minimum is a self-adjusting thing. In fact, there is a school of thought. I'll post that to you here. Should we even have a minimum wage? You know, there are countries that don't have minimum wages. You can easily find them online. And these aren't backwoods, you know, rat hole countries. Some of these countries that don't have a minimum wage do quite well. Because there's a thinking that the minimum wage actually in some ways suppresses wages. Because the ultimate thing here is if a wage is too low, somebody won't go to work there. Should we even have a minimum wage? And is Bernie Sanders right in your mind or wrong that in a few years the minimum a full-time job should pay in this country is $35,360? And should politicians, let me attach this question to it as well as we get underway here on a Friday. You know, should politicians who have never had a modicum of experience in meeting a payroll even weigh in on things like this? I understand it's what they do and they curry favor with their base and, you know, they eventually will, you know, vote up or down, yay or nay on this, and it could come back to help them or hurt them in their next electoral cycle. But think about that. What is the honesty of a politician who will sit here and say, well, you know, voting on raising or cutting or stabilizing your minimum wage when they're doing something, much like taxes, much like fees, that's going to affect the bottom line of a business owner. Now, you heard in Rob Ray's newscast there from our local newsroom that looks like an early voting bill is making its way through Hartford. Let's get an update on that. Vin Candelora joins us, Republican State House Minority Leader. Vin, it's Paul here. Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon. How are you?
Good, Vin. Good, good. Before we talk budget and maybe a couple of other things, let's talk about this early voting bill, Vin. Stephanie Thomas, the Secretary of the State, I guess, Vin, a few weeks ago said she thought 10 days was enough. She said she studied, she looked around, but it looks like it'll be more here. What's this bill say?
Yeah, essentially, it's going to be an early voting schedule of 14 days instead of the 10, which is recommended by the Secretary of the State. Each municipality will be required to have at least one polling place operational during that time. Between the hours of 10 and 6 p.m., generally, there's a Tuesday and a Thursday that has to go longer hours, I think 8 a.m. to 8 p.m.
What, Vin, are the security requirements in this bill? Are these going to be drop boxes inside, outside? Any particulars you can give us on that?
Well, I think that's sort of a little bit up in the air in question. I mean, I thought we envisioned that the tabulators, the ballots would be put inside of them and maybe locked in the tabulators for the entire 2 weeks. My understanding, I think, is that they will not be put into the machines right away. They'll be locked away somewhere. But that was some of the fuzzy details in the legislation during the discussion that didn't really make clear. A lot of this is going to be left up to the local towns to figure it out, our registrar of voters.
So in other words, Vin, you're telling me that, you know, things conceivably, Vin, I guess it won't work this way, but we could conceivably have 169 different levels of security here, conceivably?
Yeah, I mean, potentially there could be some lack of uniformity in the way things are handled, you know, especially in multiple town districts. I'm not sure how they're going to operate their polls. So you could see some communities would have multiple polling places. Others may use town hall. It's really going to be up to each community. You know, the difference in the struggle with Connecticut, unlike all the other states that have this, is that county government exists. In Connecticut, we don't have that. So it's all of our 169 towns trying to figure this out.
State House Republican Leader Vin Candelora, North Brantford, joins us talking about a cornucopia of stuff. Vin updated us on the early voting bill. Let's turn to the budget. And I know, Vin, for the first time in a bunch of years, your party, the minority Republicans, actually submitted a budget, which is encouraging because I guess you and Republicans up there, Vin, and the governor's office and the budget boys and girls might be on the same page on a lot of budgetary issues.
Yeah, I mean, every process, the Appropriations and Finance Committee meet and, you know, they go through their public hearings. And Republicans have been very active in that process. So, you know, the budgets have a lot of overlap and a lot of commonality. I would say, you know, our spending plan is similar in areas to the Democrats. We prioritize education and nonprofits. And in terms of the tax package, we do look very different from them. You know, we more align ourselves with the governor. We want to see broad-based middle-class tax relief to the residents. But, you know, it's funny how we always get criticized for not putting a budget out if we don't do one in any given year. The irony is Democrats never put a budget out. They put out a spending package and a revenue package, and they're never married up. So typically they'll have deficits and surpluses because they're not, it's not really a budget. It's a spending plan and a tax plan. So we are typically the only party in that building that produces a budget.
Vin, what is the dynamic now here in this reported cha-cha, whatever, a little bit of a shell game here? Those are my words, not yours or anyone else's, regarding, you know, to kind of get around the spending cap here. Some people are saying, well, we can go another $200, $300 million of spending if we just move some money around and not put certain revenues or whatever under the spending cap or keep it out of there. What's the deal with that?
Yeah, and the Finance Committee tried a revenue diversion. So they tried to grab the revenue that is otherwise what's under the revenue cap, which is supposed to go directly into our savings account. They tried a mechanism to divert it up to $500 million. And it really violates the spirit of those guardrails. They really want to go around them instead. So that's a non-starter, I think, with the governor. It's certainly a non-starter for Republicans. Their saving grace is we're starting to see an uptick in sales tax revenue. So, you know, there could be a way that we come to an agreement between the Democrats, Republicans, and the governor without violating any of our caps.
Republican State House Leader Vin Candelora is with us. Vin, finally, we have this non-money issue that's getting a lot of spotlight here, which to me is good because it's a life and death issue. Ultimately, it may be or may not be, hopefully, is how we deal with the growing bear population in the state. And I guess a bill there now, Vin, that came out of committee or may come out of committee, I'm not sure where it is, say, is going to not go with a bear hunt particularly, but basically, Vin, allow more people to defend themselves and their property and their livestock if there's a threat there?
Yeah, it would allow essentially anybody to be able to kill a bear on their premises if it's in their house or if it's attacking their animals or themselves. So that was a bill that got out of judiciary. You know, I would wish they would take a look at allowing for an organized hunt because even with the deer population, in my district, we have a lot of water company property, which was really overrunning it. And we did an organized hunt, and it's safe. It thins out the population, and it helps them prosper into the future. So we'll see if that ends up back on the table. The last piece is it also creates a fine if people are found intentionally feeding the bears, but you know, I do think we need more public service announcements because putting food out for wild animals in general is causing these bears to become habituated in our society. And that's also a big problem. If you want to cohabitate with these animals, you can't feed them. You know, it's the worst thing in the world you can do.
Vin, I don't know about you, but they were here, a lot of us, long before we were, and they always found food, Vin. I'm guessing, I'm guessing they don't need bird feeders, Vin, but that's just me.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
They can figure it out on themselves.
The birds are pretty resourceful, yeah. State Rep Vin Candelora, State House Leader. Vin, thank you. Appreciate it. House Leader on the Republican side, and we'll talk to you down the road. Thanks, Vin.
Sounds good.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye. All right, there you go. And he's right on that thing. You know, there need to be more fines leveled on people or levied on people. You know, if there's a bird feeder out between a certain, you know, certain times of the year. Seriously. I mean, the experts say, okay, if you want to have a bird feeder, you can. Just don't put it out or have it filled between, I don't know what it is, there's a certain months, 3 or 4 months, they say, please don't do this. So we'll see if that stays in the bill. We'll see if our gallant men and women in Hartford have the juliones, the huervos, figuratively, on women. We'll see if they will have enough of a spine for the dissent of the animal rights people who will pressure them into not voting on this. Coming to you again, former Bridgeport Democratic State Rep. Chris Caruso joins us to just muse, if you will, on what Chris has thought of during the week, stuff that he can at least talk about with us on a family radio station. Chris, how are you?
Paul, how are you doing? I'm doing well, Paul.
I'm good. Well, Chris, you had your antennae up, I guess, during the week. What piqued your interest here?
Well, there's a lot of different things going on. In Bridgeport, there's a zoning controversy that's starting to take shape and getting the attention of the newspaper, getting the attention of the general public.
Oh, yes, yes.
If you probably have read about it, it's 1775 Madison Avenue. That may not mean much to people, but it's actually the former site of the Testo restaurant and catering facility. And the controversy is this, that back in 2013, the owners of Testo's, you know, sought a zone change from commercial to residential. And against the opposition of the neighbors were opposed to it, but it was granted. And so the zone change was made. And then the new master plan for the city came in, new regulations, new zones and so forth. Roughly 2021 is when that came in. So what ended up happening was that zone change on that property back in 2013 was grandfathered in to, so when the new regs come in, the old reg on that site still remained, which allow a higher level of density development for that site. But the interesting thing is there's no provision for a public hearing.
Mm-hmm.
So on that site is 177 apartment units that will be built.
Which is a pretty good size development, Chris. This isn't 20 or 30 units. And again, some of the controversy is here, Chris, at least by, you know, by implication in some people's eyes, is that it's the restaurant of the Democratic town chair.
Oh, it was the restaurant, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it was the property. And for many years, there was three-door restaurant, then Testo's took over, and it was a commercial area. Mm-hmm. And the people of the neighborhood accepted it. But to put 177 apartment units, taking up every bit of available space, with a parking garage underneath, and the height and the density of this is going to be astronomical. And the area is predominantly single-family housing residential.
Mm-hmm.
And not to have a public hearing is really, in my view, it's a slap in the face to every taxpayer, because the people around that property are paying their taxes. They have a right to be heard. And, you know, the interesting thing, Paul, I'm not even going to get into the pros and cons of this development,
okay.
But the right to be heard is critical. That's, to me, that's so critical, to allow people to come in, voice their opinion. If they lose, they lose. They win, but at least have that opportunity. And they're not afforded that.
And so, is there any way, Chris, that this can be forced? Is anybody, like you say, who may say, well, it's a foregone conclusion, but I still want to put my thoughts on the record, any legal recourse here or not?
Well, that's what's being looked into now. I've called on the mayor to engage the city attorney's office to look at every applicable state statute, every ordinance, every zoning regulation, to see if there's a way that that can be handled. I'm speaking to land use attorneys as well to see if there's an avenue that we could pursue. So that is being done. We're going to be having, I'm in the process of putting together a public hearing to bring people together about this issue from throughout the city, because, you know, when you grandfather something in like this, mm-hmm. especially there's no provision for hearings, it could happen anywhere in Bridgeport. So I've been getting a lot of feedback from people in other parts of the city saying, hey, we want to come to this hearing. We want to hear what's going on. And we'll have a list of things that we're calling on the city council, the mayor, and the zoning board, the Planning and Zoning Commission, to enact to protect the public's interest. And again, you know, people will say, well, we don't want apartment buildings and so forth. That's not the issue. The issue is there needs to be a hearing. It's what's right and wrong. You know, this is just a plain issue of right and wrong. I call it a constitutional travesty, because public hearings, the right to speak, is just fundamental in our Constitution. I've gone so far, and frankly, I have no problem that it's almost a conspiracy against the people of the city, the taxpayers who are around that property, that they're not going to be allowed to speak. Unbeknownst, when the developer and the attorney put in the application, this was back in November, December of 2021.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget, we were in the height of the COVID. The other issue was there was no mention that there wouldn't be public hearing. So unfortunately, the public was kept out of that process. And so I think it's critically important that we work to try to get some hearing so that the voices of the people, especially in that area, are heard, because I think that's critically important.
Are you getting any blowback from this, Chris? I understand you may not want to mention names here, but is your phone humming and buzzing on this?
Well, if, you know, Paul, if anyone knows me and my career in politics, I have always gotten blowback. but the one thing I haven't gotten is paudes in Italian. I haven't gotten nervous, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, Paul, I think there's times when you have to speak up on what's right. And those times just present themselves. I don't believe you fight on every issue, because I don't think it's productive. But this is just an issue of right and wrong. And, you know, when taxpaying people in that area, you know, good people, good, decent people work every day, support their families. You have some elderly people living in that area. The fundamental right to a hearing is just so critical. I can't imagine, the height of this building is going to be so tall that there'll be no sunlight to the homes around there. There'll be blocks of sun. That's how high. And 177, if we just take 17 units on each floor and plus the underground garage, you're going to have over 11, 12 stories.
Mm.
So it's going to be monumental. And again, I think it's only important that the people have a right to speak.
All right, Chris, anything else on your mind here?
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting what's going to be happening with early voting.
Yeah.
You know, we have to keep in mind that that was voted on by the public in a referendum, constitutional change, as a matter of fact, and that was voted on by the public. I think it will work okay because I think most towns will have just one spot where people can go and vote, so that's going to reduce the cost. You know, I think you've raised some good issues. There's got to be security systems in place, and let's see how it works. But it is the will of the people. They got to vote on it. I think we have to let that play out and see where it goes. The other thing, I had lunch today with the House Chair of the Environment Committee. And we got on the
our former WICC star, Joe Gresko. Yeah.
Joe Gresko. Great guy.
I've known Joe
for quite a while. And we got on talking about the bottle bill, and everyone out there should know that as of January 1, the amount collected is 10 cents rather than 5 cents, and now it includes almost all of the juice bottles. Matter of fact, he was drinking from a juice bottle and said this is going to be included. And the nips, you know, the small bottles, the liquor bottles.
Yes. I have a full set. I have several empty ones right here now, Chris, in front of me.
And you know, the interesting thing about it, that's going to be 10 cents. And that's not part of the bottle bill. But what he was able to work out through legislation is that from the town where those nips are actually redeemed, the town will receive money. So, for example, New Haven over the last, I think it was 6 months, is over $130,000 that goes to New Haven. Bridgeport is over $230,000. And that money can only be used for environmental issue, the parks, anything environmental. So I think that's pretty exciting, you know, and I think it's good. I think the bottle bill, Paul, is probably one of the best pieces of legislation, right? Mm-hmm. Isn't it? And the other thing for your listeners, the Redemption Center in Stratford is going to be closing, and that's going to be moving now over to Boston Avenue, where the old GE site is. So just a future reference, And one final thing.
Sure, Paul.
I know drag queens has been the topic of the day. I just want to let everyone know Some Like It Hot on Broadway is one of the number one musicals. And has received like 7 Tony Awards.
Yeah.
And as you recall, Tony Curtis.
Was it Jack Lemmon? Yeah.
They dressed as women, and it was one of the top shows in 1959, and now it's on Broadway. The comedian Dame Edna dresses Milton Berle dressed as woman, and I just think we're making much ado about nothing. You know, it's part of the culture, and frankly. You want to go see it, you see it, you don't. But I marvel sometime listening and then finding out, you know, Some Like It Hot is the top show on Broadway.
Chris, and I've never doubted that. I said, but this is generally adult entertainment. I get it. And Chris, I think honestly some of the people get a little where they're like, well, okay, we get that. We grew up with Milton Berle and Bob Hope doing that, and Jamie Farr on MASH trying to get kicked out. But there's some people, honestly, who say, all right, we get that, but you know, to school kids, that's kind of where I think, Chris, you get people saying, all right, we get it, but can we let kids be kids for a while? That's my own.
And I think that lies with the parents, Paul.
Yes.
You know, if the parents don't want to go see a show or anyone doesn't want to, you don't go. You know, there were shows on Broadway, for example, here, where nudity was introduced, right?
Oh, my God, I remember
Right. And you choose whether or not you want to go. And I think to some extent, I just think, a lot of times people get all worked up, even on Facebook, about this stuff. And I'm saying,
Wait a minute. Hold it. People get worked up on Facebook. You're kidding, Chris.
Oh, sure they do. Oh, you certainly do.
You're kidding.
And you know, it's just so funny because they criticize, and yet it's become part of our culture in some ways. But, you know, I think, again, you got to understand it. And as you said, I think parents have a right to say no. They don't want their children to go to it, and you go from there, you know?
Yeah, and Chris, I don't know whether you heard earlier in the week my own personal, listen, we can all live happily together. You know, if Bud Light's going to have Dylan Mulvaney, and there's been blowback from that. Well, obviously, yeah. Chris, the balance should be Ted Nugent hooking up with Starbucks, right? Wouldn't that be? I mean, there you go. And everybody's happy. Chris, thanks. Have a great week.
Okay,
we'll talk down
you.
The road.
Take care.
All right. See, folks, right? Wouldn't that just be fine? The right's getting all nuts and crazy about Dylan Mulvaney and Bud Light. Well, the perfect way to have an equal opportunity rage, like I said, I'm not backing away from this, Ted Nugent branding with Starbucks.